Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins. And folks, it is leak week here on Ring of Fire. We're going to have Heather Digby Parton from Salon.com talking about all the leaks we have seen this week. Text messages, audio recordings, book excerpts, everything that exposes to a degree what we know about the Republican involvement in the coup attempts of Donald Trump and his administration. We'll also be taking a look at Elon Musk's takeover of Twitter, along with the Republican decision to start punishing corporations who don't agree with them. Matthew Gertz, senior fellow with Media Matters for America, will be here for that story. And if you want to get the full show every single week, plus access to the Ring of Fire archives, become a member. Just go to ROFpodcast.com to sign up. And don't forget, you can get Ring of Fire every single day of the week on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. Make sure you go subscribe there. So I guess you could call this leak week, because we have found out so much information about so many different issues, all of them, of course, affecting this country in tremendous ways. Joining me now to talk about, just all of the leaks about everything, Heather Digby Parton from Salon.com. Heather, it's wonderful to have you back again this week. Wow. I mean, I think that's the best I can say at the moment is just, oh my goodness, there is so much to cover here. This truly, what we've seen in the last 7 days since you and I last spoke, is absolutely, I mean, just it's mind-blowing, and it's so much to take in, isn't it?
It really is. And, you know, some of this is coming from the new book by Jonathan Martin and Alexander Burns of the New York Times, who got a hold of these audio tapes of Kevin McCarthy talking to his leadership team in the aftermath of January 6th. And that alone is mind-boggling, because, you know, what it shows is that they made the big mistake of you know, actually having a moment of conscience, or at least the appearance of the moment of a moment of conscience among themselves. I mean, they sort of, you know, some of them, Kevin McCarthy, the House minority leader, he sort of came out publicly a little bit and said, you know, the president bears some responsibility, and he admonished his members, you know, don't go out and say mean things about other representatives, because, you know, the country's kind of crazy right now. But behind the scenes, they were much, much more, well, first of all, concerned about the violence that was, you know, in the air after January 6th, and that they were going to exacerbate it with some of their crazy talk, especially the right wing members like Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene and those people. And McCarthy and his team were very upset. And of course, one of the big things about this that's so interesting is that the only person who's been in any way chastised and held accountable for anything they've done is Liz Cheney. And she was kicked out of leadership for saying exactly the same things that McCarthy and Steve Scalise and Elise Stefanik and the rest of these people were saying in private. And she was on those calls, too, of course. And we don't know who leaked them. She claims it wasn't her. Take her at her word. But somebody did. And they were all on the same page at that time. But publicly, of course, it's been Liz Cheney hanging out on a limb all by herself, being the only one who consistently said in public what she said, what they were saying in private. So it's very interesting. And of course, the dynamic is super interesting because, you know, everybody's wondering, well, what happens if you get caught lying completely blatantly in public, as Kevin McCarthy did when confronted with this, with these comments, and he lied and said it never happened. And then, of course, they came out with the audio tape saying, you know, hey, Kev, guess what? And he still, wormed his way out of it. And everybody's going, well, gee, what's going to happen? Donald Trump will be really mad and they'll all reject him and everything. And so far, Kevin's doing just fine. There is rumblings around the fringe that Matt Gaetz and his buddies aren't happy with it. And you can see there's going to potentially be a battle if it gets to the point where he really is running for House Speaker. And that happens depending on how big the majority is, if he gets one and what happens in the interim here. But the big question was, what's Donald Trump going to do? And Trump has just been doing his dominance play, you know, the thing where, hey, I didn't like what he said. I didn't like what I heard. But he came crawling. He groveled. He licked my boots real good. And so I'm fine with it. You know, Kevin knows he better not do anything like that in the future. And that's basically where we stand. Of course, I'm paraphrasing him. He didn't say those exact words, but that's pretty much what he meant. So this is very fascinating. But then at the same time, as you point out, it's not the only leaks. We've got texts coming, not, you know, falling from heaven that are coming through to CNN that apparently must be being leaked, I'm assuming, from the January 6th committee. And I assume they have a reason for leaking them the way that they are. And I think it's actually pretty smart because it keeps the story. You know, it's not just one big story. It's kind of dribbling out, and every day there's something new. Sort of, it's the repetition of something happened that keeps it in people's minds. So I think it's pretty smart that they're doing it. But some of the stuff in these texts, oh my God.
It really is. You know, I do want to hit on a point you made there, because you mentioned the fact that Liz Cheney is actually the only one that's been punished for anything. You know, post January 6th, I actually mentioned that in a video that we released Thursday evening. Just the fact that Kevin McCarthy behind the scenes is saying all these, like Matt Gaetz could get people killed, was his concern. And so instead of saying, okay, we got to do something about Gaetz, we got to do something about Boebert, eventually what happened is now we got to do something about Liz Cheney. And so Kevin McCarthy really did go back and become this bootlicker for Donald Trump and said, okay, all of these things, and of course, I guess at the time Trump didn't know about it, but all these things, don't worry about all that. I'm your guy. I'm still doing these things. So, you know, I know Matt Gaetz has been one of the loudest voices out there this week saying, Kevin McCarthy's got to go. He's terrible. You should have listened to me instead of listening to Liz Cheney. He may have a hard time selling that, because when you look at McCarthy's record, not only has he, since that audio was obviously recorded, been a staunch Trump guy, but he's also punished Liz Cheney, and he's, you know, blocked everything the Democrats have tried to do in the House. It's hard to pick him apart when his record really does speak for himself. Maybe he's concerned behind the scenes, but publicly, he's just as bad as the rest of them. So, you know, I think Matt Gaetz has a hard sell there if he wants to challenge, you know, for that leadership position, especially. Wednesday it was this week. McCarthy holds his meeting with his Republicans. Marjorie Taylor Greene reportedly was there. She was allowed to speak. It was reported there was no yelling. There was no confrontation. Everybody got along. So McCarthy is doing his best right now to kind of keep this. I think he's reported to say, like, listen, yeah, I said those things, but I did that privately. You know, publicly, I never say bad things about any of you. I love you. So he's doing damage control, and right now it does seem to be working. That's the weirdest part. He's kind of fleeced his own Republican members the same way they go out there and fleece the voters by saying, yeah, you heard me say these things, but you guys know I didn't mean it. It was taken out of context, he said.
Right.
Just absolute backtracking faster than you could ever see. And they're, you know, low information enough to just say, oh, Kevin, you're right. We love you, Kevin. You're still doing great. So it will be interesting, because I think more leaks of McCarthy audio will be coming soon. You know, the Burns and Martin, I believe, they have said they got more. So hopefully we see more. But yeah, like you said, now we got to pivot to these text messages, because that's really the heart of the crazy, because we've got members of the House, a lot of the ones we've already mentioned too, actively involved, almost begging, it seems, what can we do to overturn this election? I mean, that's in the record now with these text messages.
Absolutely. And they were going directly to these all came from Mark Meadows, the former chief of staff. So they were going directly to the White House. It wasn't just a bunch of guys sitting around the bar chewing the fat, you know, and thinking, gee, what can we do? This was, you know, these were members of Congress, elected representatives, sending this stuff to Mark Meadows. And what these text messages have revealed, which I think is really important, because I get the sense from comments by Jamie Raskin, the congressman from Maryland, who's on the committee, and he's sort of been I don't know. He's the guy who's out there kind of, you know, giving hints about where they're going with the committee. And what this indicates is he calls it the inside coup versus the outside coup, right? And what they're looking for are connections between those two things, between the January 6th and what was going on externally outside the party and outside the White House and the administration, and what was going on within the administration. And what you're seeing with these texts is where this stuff is converging, right? You're seeing these people come together. We've known for years, well, years, we've known for 15 months at least, that there was all this stuff going on at the Department of Justice. They were trying to get rid, I mean, they were basically strong-arming the Department of Justice to step in and say that the election was tainted. And Bill Barr even ended up quitting around that time. I mean, I'm not giving him any kudos. He was terrible. But in this one moment, he just deserted the sinking ship. I don't think it was any act of conscience because he didn't say anything. It was just him getting out while the getting was good. And then all the machinations within the DOJ to get, you know, to get them to involve themselves in this thing. And they refused all the acting. And it was all, and they were going to fire all those people. Trump was, you know, under advisement that he could fire them all, install this toady named Jeffrey Clark, and get him to do all the dirty work. And it was only just this sort of rising up of people in the White House counsel's office and other places in the administration that said, look, they're all going to quit if you do this. The entire upper echelon of the Department of Justice is going to quit. It's going to look really bad. And Trump backed off of that. But that wasn't the only thing. Of course, we know about meetings with Sidney Powell and Michael Flynn. And so now, though, we're getting these text messages, which we've only sort of heard about peripherally, of members of Congress being involved in all this stuff. One guy in particular just astonishes me. It's a guy named Scott Perry from Pennsylvania. He's a representative. I had never heard of him before now, but he's a former brigadier general. He did 40 years in the Army, big high level guy. He was immersed in all this QAnon stuff and crazy stuff. And he had a direct pipeline to the White House. And he was these new text messages this week show him telling Mark Meadows that he needs to get the NSA involved to start looking into the Dominion voting machines and follow Gina Haspel, the director of the CIA at the time, because she was over there working with the Brits. Now, this was a new one to me, that the Brits had involved themselves in the election and had, you know, were involved in stealing the election with the voting machines. That's the kind of crazy that we were dealing with. And these people had high level access to the White House. This is the White House chief of staff. It's one of the most important jobs in the world. And it's, of course, he's right next to the president. And we know the president was hearing equally loony stuff from Sidney Powell and Rudy Giuliani. So this is where I think we're finding a new, this is where these stories this week, I think, are coming to sort of a new level, where we're seeing that the Congress, the GOP Congress, was intimately involved in the coup. And that is something that we've always kind of known, and there were few on the fringes. But now I think it's pretty clear that there were a lot of them, that they knew about it, that they were helping with it. And so now what we're going to look at is what was happening in the hours before January 6th and on January 6th, all the rumors that we've heard about, you know, bringing Pete, you know, Lauren Boebert tweeting 1776 and taking people on tours. That's the kind of stuff that we're still kind of waiting for, I think.
Yeah, and not to mention, too, with the text messages, the martial law.
Oh, my God.
With the Marjorie Taylor Greene saying, hey, some of the members are already starting to talk about this. I mean, we're talking about very real sedition, at least in the discussion parts of this. You know, maybe you could declare martial law. And with Mark Meadows, you know, you brought up how Perry's saying, oh, maybe it's the Brits. And Mark Meadows was thinking maybe it's the Italian space lasers. And you've got Mike Lindell out there saying, no, it's the ghost of Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. I mean, just I guess every country in the world and leaders alive and dead both somehow conspired to steal this election in favor of Joe Biden. But the martial law, I mean, that, okay, now you've definitely crossed a line here. And to me, that is obviously one of the most damning, especially for somebody who's currently, you know, sitting on trial about whether or not she can even be on the ballot That, I think, creates some serious legal problems for her.
And she lied about it on the stand. I mean, she committed perjury when she claimed she, now she's saying, you know, I don't remember any of that. I just don't remember a thing about anything. But, you know, I mean, that just isn't very believable. She's a lot of things, but she doesn't seem like somebody with a faulty memory. But that is true. And what they were talking about, when you're saying martial law, you're basically talking about a military coup, right? I mean, declaring martial law, bringing in the military to do God knows what. I mean, I don't know what, surround the White House and refuse to let Trump. I don't know what those plans were. But what's interesting about that is that this came from, she says it in her text, on our private chat group, this is that they're talking about martial law. And I thought you should know. That private chat group, somebody was quoted saying to the CNN reporter who was reporting this, that private chat group is really bad. And if anybody ever gets a hold of those those records or records of the chat, it's going to be really bad. And you know, that just the fact that he put that in there, the CNN reporter, makes me wonder, you know, somebody's, I know who, it wasn't a CNN reporter, it was Robert Costa. From he's now with CBS, but you know, he used to be with the Washington Post. He it's him, and he's got good contacts in the Republican Party because he used to work for the National Review, and he was kind of, you know, in that clique. And so he I have a feeling that those are out there, although people are probably frantically deleting them. And I'm sure the January 6th committee knows that they're out there. And I don't know if they have them, but they know that they're out there. So that's very interesting. And what they were talking about, and, you know, again, these are people with a direct line to the White House at the time. They're talking about martial law. And we know that Trump was talking about invoking the Insurrection Act for years. This was, anytime there was a protest, Trump was apparently talking about the Insurrection Act. He did for the Black Lives Matter protests. He was desperate to get it done, and it took a huge pushback from people like General Milley and, you know, people in the military to say, no, you know, you really don't want to do that. That's really, really not cool. So I totally believe there was serious discussion of this. Absolutely. I have no doubt.
Well, and when you add that in with the various different plans they had proposed, you know, using FBI to seize the voting machines, then maybe using, you know, other parts of the DOJ, Department of Homeland Security, getting the National Guard. I mean, there were multiple different groups. They're like, well, can they go and seize these voting machines? And most of it, you know, military or intelligence apparatus that really would have been an actual coup at that point, because they didn't want the voting machines so they could audit them. They wanted the voting machines so they could pretend they found something and throw out all the votes. That is 100% what would have happened. And so, okay, so there's another part of this. Mike Pence, I'm not getting in that car. Strong words that really seem to indicate that Mike Pence thought something was up. So tell us about that. I'm not getting in that car, Tim.
Well, yeah, and it goes on. That's Jamie Raskin, who I mentioned earlier. He's the one who said those are the six most chilling words, I think, in American history. I'm kind of, whoa. Yeah, but the full quote sort of even makes it more chilling, in my view, because he said, I'm not getting in that car, Tim. I trust you, but if I get in but you won't be driving that car, or something to that effect. And it's like, so what he was saying was that he didn't trust these other Secret Service agents. And there's good reason for that. And the good reason is that there was a group of Secret Service agents in the Trump administration who were just straight up Trumpers. One of them, who was involved in this particular thing, was actually brought out of the Secret Service and turned into a political operative in the White House. And this is all reported in Carol Lennig's book about the Secret Service. And so, you know, this is for real. And he was turned into a White House, you know, advisor, which has never happened before. The Secret Service is supposed to be totally apolitical. They don't do that kind of thing. They don't get involved in anything but protecting the president on that detail. But that, they, of course, Trump, you know, he doesn't care. He did exactly that. And that guy apparently was approached by Keith Kellogg, who was Pence's national security advisor, who was in the White House with President Trump while January 6th was going on. And Kellogg said to him, you know, what's going on? He said, well, we want to take him, the Secret Service agent said, we want to take Pence to Andrews Air Force Base. And Kellogg said, absolutely not. You guys aren't taking him anywhere. You'll take him to Alaska if we let you. No, he's staying there. Now, there are different ways you can look at that. But under the circumstances, Pence had been under tremendous pressure from Trump for days. He'd been in the White House the night before. And on the night before, Trump had said to him, as he's listening to all these shouting of the January 5th rallies that were going on outside with all the Proud Boys and stuff like that. He hears all the shouting, and he's in the Oval Office, and he and Pence are talking about this, and Pence said, I don't have the authority to do that. And Trump looked out the window and said, what if these people say you do? So that's what Pence heard the night before. That day, on January 6th, they all come storming into the Capitol. They're screaming, hang Mike Pence. And you've got the Secret Service saying, we got to get you out of here. And Pence knows, of course, that there are Trumpers in the Secret Service. So, you know, it's not too much under all these circumstances, with all this seditious conspiracy talk that was going on all around him, that he was very concerned they were going to take him out of there and spirit him away. And if he wasn't there to, you know, count the votes, that, you know, when they at the end of the day, which they ended up doing, he was afraid he wasn't going to be let back in. And, you know, his chief of staff, Mark Short, said after this was first reported, which I think was in the Lenig and Rucker book, he said, well, he was just afraid. He didn't want our adversaries to see a bunch of black cars leaving the Capitol with him in it. He thought that that would weaken America or some other nonsense. Yeah,
right. As if what was happening that day wasn't weakening us enough.
Exactly. Like, that's going to be the thing that really tips him off, you know. But, you know, I think it's fair to speculate that Pence was definitely afraid that they were going to take him out and he wouldn't be allowed to come back. And that would have been the delay in the count. And maybe, you know, that would have been when martial law was, because I think what they, some of this was them trying to provoke the other side, right? There was some sense, I think, that they wanted to get fighting in the streets and that they were looking for, you know, some kind of rebellion coming from the left. Would they take over the Capitol? And then there's a fight. I mean, there's been some issues with the Proud Boys and some of these other people who were doing planning, that they were looking for that. And then that would, of course, been the excuse for martial law. And then, you know, who knows? So, I mean, this stuff is scary and it's absolutely real. And it's still ongoing with all kinds of other stuff that's still happening out in the States. We talked about that. This is no joke. And the fact that you have all these same players in power, still working toward more power, consolidating their power in the Congress, which we now know was involved. This is scary stuff, and it's important. And I don't think we know the whole story yet. I think it's still coming out. I mean, it is still coming out.
Right. Well, I mean, we've still, I feel like we've just barely scratched the surface at this point. And I know the January 6th committee definitely knows way more than what we know, what reporters know. So that's also more terrifying, because there's things that they do know and they're building their case based on that. But at the same time, that committee has made it clear, you know, we're not going to be subpoenaing our own members. You know, we're not going to call these members of Congress. And of course, I both agree and disagree with that, because obviously we need them to do that. So I disagree with it there. But I also understand, if you do that, that is huge fodder for the Republicans to say, oh, see, now they're questioning us. They've politicized it, and they'll delegitimize the whole thing. So on the whole, I agree with it. However, if the DOJ had a special prosecutor, then all bets are off. The special prosecutor with a grand jury can call in anybody. Yeah. And that is where this has to go. That is where we have to go with this, because of everything we know. We can't just, you know, hope that if they issue these criminal, you know, referrals, which is all it would be, that Merrick Garland and the DOJ is going to be able to do it. I think they're very afraid of that. So put it on a special prosecutor. Take it off of yourself, DOJ. You know, just say, listen, okay, obviously there's more than enough evidence. We know this. We've seen it. The committee has it. Get a special prosecutor out there, actually multiple, I think, at this point. Let them be the person to take this over and run with it. This committee wants to wrap up within the next 2 months. Actually, at this point, month and a half-ish. They've got to get in campaign mode. And we're not ready for that. we don't have the answers yet. And I don't think they do either, because all they're finding is more leads. So this investigation can't just conclude when we're only halfway through it or a quarter through it or whatever it is. We know it's not 100%, and it certainly won't be within 2 months either.
Absolutely. And I agree with you. I mean, a special prosecutor idea is probably, I mean, maybe that's where it will go. I mean, I keep thinking, well, maybe they decided that they have to wait until the election, and then, because we will, the DOJ will still be run by Merrick Garland. It'll still be part of the Biden administration. So it's not, they're not hamstrung in any way. The Congress is. Once, if they lose the election in the fall, that's it. You know, in fact, we'll be on to impeachment of Joe Biden. That's where that's going.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're in a whole different world then. So they have a limited amount of time, but the Department of Justice doesn't, and they need to get going. This stuff takes time, and we know that it takes time. Now, maybe they can, you know, the committee can offload all everything that they've got, and then the Department of Justice can pick it up. Maybe they're already looking into it, but you know, you wonder why there haven't been any leaks about that. But the one thing I'm concerned about with the Department of Justice is something that Merrick Garland said this week. They asked him about the Hunter Biden investigation. And there's no Jared Kushner investigation, by the way, for some unknown reason. But there is a Hunter Biden investigation. And he said, well, you don't have to worry. It's being run by a Trump-appointed U.S. attorney. And I'm an independent person. So you don't need to worry. And I heard that and I'm going, are you kidding me? I mean, this is like apparently... Any Democrat, for an investigation to be fair, has to be run by a Republican. Robert Mueller, for instance, he was that guy's not a liberal Democrat, or James Comey or any of the rest of them, if any Democrat is being investigated, it has to be investigated by a Republican if you want it to be fair. That seems to be the rule. So, I don't know. Is Merrick Garland going to appoint, Ken Starr or some Ken Starr person to investigate this? Because, I wouldn't be surprised at this point. I mean, I'm a little leery.
Yeah, I have reservations about it, too. But listen, Heather, the phenomenal conversation, phenomenal pieces you do. And there's so much to keep up with. I mean, this point on a daily basis. So I'm glad to have you out there. And it's always a pleasure to talk to you. We'll be talking more about this, in the coming weeks, because like I said, I don't think the leaks are done. So
I don't either.
Thank you so much for talking with us.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me. It was fun.
That's it for the free portion of this week's Ring of Fire podcast. But if you want the whole show, every week, make sure you go to rofpodcast.com to sign up. It's easy, it's fast, and not only do you get the full show, you also get access to the entirety of the Ring of Fire show archives. So if you're a new member and you want to go back and explore all that content you didn't get to hear over the last few years, it's all available to you. Again, go sign up at rofpodcast.com.